Going back home.
You know, it might not be a life rule, but I think it's accurate to say that folks like to romanticize the past, would you say? We do like to romanticize the past, especially past positive experiences, to the point that the memory of the event is much more positive than the experience that you had, which is not a bad thing. I mean, I like having positive memories of things that were pretty positive, but maybe not quite as positive. It's like the fish story, right? Caught a fish. It grows every year. And I think folks might do the same with bad experiences too, with the memory amplifying the experience in a negative way. Maybe not as often. I went to the Boundary Waters in, I think it was 2005, and Cassie went along to the Boundary Waters. I said to her, "You don't want to go to the Boundary Waters. You won't like it." But some people from the church and the youth group said, "Oh, you'll love it." So she said, "Okay, I'll go." And I said, "You're not going to like this." Well, we got back, and I said, "Did you like it?" She said, "No." I said, "And that now it's 8 years later. Do you think that you liked it?" "No." I think that the negative experience was amplified, and it has not been romanticized. "Do you want to go back to the Boundary Waters?" "No, not at all." It's the old saying, you really can't go back home. Things aren't the same when you try to go back to that event, try to recreate it or something. In this morning's Bible reading, the prophet announces that God is going to do a new thing. Just before that, though, those of you who were reading and wanted to look before, now you'll do it a little bit later, but just before that, there was this brief warning not to romanticize the past, the events, and all that the people were, because the new things weren't going to be like the things from before. See, the people of Israel did like to romanticize the past. They were wandering. They were living in exile. And they were thinking about how good it was. It wasn't so great, really, but they were thinking about how good it was. They were a people delivered out of bondage in Egypt, and they remembered that. They were a people who walked through the sea. Well, their would-be captors were drowned. They were a people wandering in the wilderness for a generation. Not so positive, but they were a people together doing that. They were a people at Sinai getting the Ten Commandments. They were a people who finally made it to the Promised Land. And then they were a people who had been thrown out of their lands. They were a people with this strong history, but they didn't have a place to call home, so they looked back and said, "Those were the good old days. That's what we have to get back to. When we get back to that, everything will be whole again." That's what the people in exile were saying. But things don't work that way. Not then, and it doesn't do it now either. And the prophet acknowledged that, well, people need to remember. We need to remember the past. If we don't remember the good and the bad from the past, we're bound to repeat the mistakes of the past, and we're also bound to not do the good things from the past. And we need to remember what God has done for us. Here at St. Paul's, we need to remember our history. Tradition is good, but there's a warning. Things don't always work out that way when you look back and try to recreate what was. And in Isaiah, it says, "Do not remember the former things or consider the things of old." You can't just forget. But the prophet says, don't remember them so fondly that you can't move forward, is really what it's saying. We can't ignore our history. Prophet still has this warning. Don't dwell on your history or romanticize it or expect that what comes next will be just like what had come before in the glory days. Everyone has their glory days. And God says, I'm about to do a new thing. That's the biggie in this morning's reading. No comparison to the past possible. A new thing. For the people of Israel, it was a return home. with a reminder that it wasn't going to be like it was before. God was doing a new thing. Like this line, it's a confusing line, but it says, "The wild animals will honor me, the jackals and the ostriches, for I give water in the wilderness, rivers in the desert, and give drink to my chosen people." Ostriches? Jackals? I don't know what it has to do with the people in the wilderness. And there's one of the reasons I think this line here is confusing. The animals are maybe being compared to the people in exile. And maybe the word that's being translated is ostrich. Maybe it's eagle owl, which is probably no less confusing. Maybe it's just words of encouragement because God is doing a new thing. Or maybe because you've got all of these animals that don't normally do things together, doing things together, God's good at this part. See, God's doing a new thing and he's flipping the whole world upside down. It's different. God did a new thing. God is doing a new thing, and God will do a new thing. That relates to God's name. We call God Yahweh, related to the verb Ehya, which is to be. It's the verb to be in Hebrew, but it's more than just, it's all the tenses together. Yahweh is I am, I was, I will be. You know how we call God's name, that's I am? It's not just I am, it's I was, it's I will be. And I've said this before, God's name also means, truly it means I will be what the future requires. God turns the world upside down. I know that God is doing a new thing here at St. Paul's. And it turns the world upside down. And you know, it's a difficult path to follow. What is it that God is doing? What is the new thing? Maybe it seems like, you know, we've been around for a long time. Since when? Do you remember from the beginning of the service? 1893. We've been around for a long time. But let me make a bold prediction. If we decide to stay on the path that we're on, that we've been on and off, and pretty much since 1893, if we decide to stay on that path, in 20 years, we won't be a congregation. I don't think we will. God's doing a new thing. We haven't quite figured out what it all is. But I don't think we have time to decide, oh, we can just keep going along and doing everything the same way. See, this new thing that God is doing, let me push some buttons here. Expect to be angry just for the next few minutes. The new thing that God is doing, I don't think it includes they can't be part of this or this is mine, don't you dare touch it or, you know, I don't like it this way or it's too loud or if I don't like the way things are going, I'm going to take my pledge and go home or I liked it the way it was, why do things have to change? Really, it's not about anything having to do with this community here having any kind of exclusive, marginalizing, disdainful, territorial, or unwelcoming attitude attached to it. I know that we are good at being the positive side of those, but we're also good at being the negative side of those. Every church is. We're not alone in that. But the new thing that God is doing has nothing to do with those things. See, we've got to be able to experience, contribute to, and be part of the new thing that God is doing. And it isn't a question as to whether God's going to do a new thing. See, God's done a new thing. 1893 was a new thing. 1956 and 1957 was a new thing. For that matter, 1500 was a new thing. God has done a new thing. God is doing a new thing, and God will continue to do a new thing. And God doesn't do exclusive, marginalizing, disdainful, territorial, or unwelcoming. God just turns the world upside down. God's new thing does include welcome, reconciliation, healing, acceptance, community, invitation, service, attending to one another. God's new thing has very little to do with buildings. It has very little to do with what music you play in worship. It has very little to do with technology. It has very little to do with constitutions and bylaws. It has very little to do with committees and rules. And look, I don't claim to speak as if this is exactly what God is doing. It would both be presumptuous and preposterous for me to presume to speak for exactly what God is thinking. As a congregation, we have to work together to follow what God is doing, to do our best to know what that is and to trust that the direction that we're going is the one that God would have us go. And at the same time, we have to ask some personal questions. We have to ask the questions, what is the new thing, the turning of the world upside down that I long to see for in my life? What is that thing? I want God to do this. I long for it. God, turn the world upside down. This is what I want. It doesn't mean that that's exactly what it is, but we got to ask that question. We have to ask, what is the new thing, the turning of the world upside down that we long to see God do here within these walls and outside of the walls? So, we have to hold on. Fasten your seatbelts is the proper term, I think. Everyone has to wear their seatbelts now, right? Just a little quiz. How many of you wear your seatbelts? How many of you do not? How many of you do it as a protest saying that personal liability should not be legislated by law? Yeah, there we go. But, okay, hold on, everyone. And for almost everyone, fasten your seatbelts. Because, you know what? It's going to be an adventure. It's not going to be an easy one. But I hope that we can fully experience, fully embrace, and fully be turned upside down by what God is doing, because God is doing a new thing. Amen.